Folks, welcome to Paisa Paisa. I'm your host Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter, and I hope that all of you are staying safe in these very tough times. And as always, a big thank you to all the doctors, all the policemen, all the delivery guys, the medical staff, everybody on the front line who is fighting this war for us so that we can stay safe at home. My guest today, Nimesh Shah, Head of Investments at BNP Paribas Wealth Management, is going to be talking to us about asset allocation during these really volatile times. Now, if you've been looking at the stock markets, if you've been looking at the debt markets, you've been seeing all kinds of things happening. For us on the Nifty, I think we went from 12,500 all the way to 7,500, and now we are at about 9,000 in percentage terms. That's like minus 40% plus 20%, and all of that in what, less than 1 month or 2 months. So that's a lot to deal with. Similarly, on the debt side, we've seen some very weird things happening. Thankfully, it happened towards the end of March, which in any case is a bit tight on the liquidity side. And then there's, of course, you know, what happened with oil. We're recording this on 21st April, and the news of the morning or rather last night was that oil futures were negative, which is that people, I can go into technicalities, but it's just something that's really weird. So in this kind of an atmosphere, in this kind of an environment, what exactly do you do with your investments? You know, for some, it could be an opportunity. For some, it could be a crisis. But to have a very structured approach around your asset allocation during these specific times. Now, asset allocation, in any case, is a very good concept. All of us should stick to it and have rules and a framework towards it. But during these times, when you're seeing once in a decade things happening, it becomes more important. I'm really thrilled to have Nimesh, who's the head of investments at BNP Paribas Wealth Management, to help our listeners, all of us, to figure this entire thing out. So Nimesh, thank you so much for joining us today. Let's just start with this. You know, maybe we can just put a small description or small understanding for our listeners ki what exactly is asset allocation and this entire concept of tactical strategy, you know, that we had spoken about just before we started recording. So let's start from there.
Hey, thanks Anupam for this, and you know, like what you mentioned earlier, staying safe, whether it is health or your investments, that's important, and that's where you know, asset allocation kind of you know, helps investors to be relatively safe. Basically, the asset allocation in terms of the strategy means that one has to look at their own risk appetite and invest in you know, investments which are you know, related as far as their risks are, which are not correlated as far as their risks are concerned. So that really kind of helps to diversify your portfolio across various asset classes, which in turn kind of reduces the risk. So broadly, you know, asset allocation as has been understood can be divided into two aspects. One is the strategic or long-term asset allocation, and second one is the tactical or short-term allocation. So strategic would mean typically, you know, with a 3 to 5 year view, especially on equity, and tactical would mean probably, you know, 6 months to 1 to 1.5 year of view as far as tactical or you know, opportunistic asset allocation is concerned. So you know, asset allocation does play an important role to ensure that you are not you know, overly invested in one particular asset class. And secondly, you're also understanding the risks which can emanate from investing into a particular asset class. So that's where it is important to understand that. And that typically helps your portfolio to be less risk-averse than what other you know, portfolios can be if the asset allocation strategy is not followed.
Fantastic. Thanks, Nimesh, for that. You know, for making us understand the concept of asset allocation and the difference between tactical and strategic. So just give us a, you know, an overview of what exactly has happened. A lot of us have, you know, we had a lower circuit day in the stock markets on 13th March and on 23rd March. Then towards the end of March, there was a huge liquidity crunch. I don't know how much of that is seasonal and how much of that it was unique to what we are going through. And then, of course, now we've got this oil event. So could you just give our listeners a very brief backdrop of what exactly is happening overall in the markets, whether it is equity, whether it is debt, in the backdrop of global events? So just give us your take on that.
Sure. So if you look at the global events, the way they have panned out, you know, what started with, you know, the pandemic issue, in a very short period, you know, at that point of time, we had two black swan events. One was definitely the, you know, the epidemic of COVID-19 actually becoming a pandemic and WHO declaring it to be so. And second one was in terms of the you know, oil prices itself at that point of time, where the price war started purely because the OPEC could not reach to a conclusion as far as the cut in production is concerned. The rapidly falling demand in oil you know, necessitated that the you know, oil producers cut their output, and there was no agreement on that. And therefore, at that point of time, we had this double swan effect, where in March, the markets kind of you know, saw the bottom circuits purely from the point of view of you know, the expected losses to the global economies due to the pandemic. And also from the point of view of the effect of oil, which is one of the largest commodities as far as the world is concerned. So that is what really kind of triggered off the sell-offs that we saw. And this being a global event, which is kind of unforeseen, you know, in terms of hitting multiple countries at a similar time. And unlike what we have seen earlier, whether it was 9/11 or whether it was, you know, the financial crisis, which was restricted to a particular country or restricted to a particular sector of the of a global economy, this is something which the markets were caught totally unaware. And that's where I call this as a double swan effect that hit us, you know, first time in history.
Great. So, Nimesh, now let's get down to asset classes. Okay, folks, we're going to talk about just equity and debt on this episode. So, Nimesh, let's start with equity. What's your broad view on that? You know, what exactly has happened? What is happening right now? Maybe some kind of an outlook on the future. Let's just start with equity.
Sure. So as we are all aware, you know, the markets kind of fell by almost about 38% to 40% from the peak of almost about 41,900 that we had seen in January, and all the way down to about 25,900.
That's on the Sensex. Yeah, sorry.
On the Sensex, yes. And that fall, which we saw kind of rebound in a few days, and currently we are seeing the markets at around 30,000 to 31,000. So, you know, from the point of view of overall carnage, which has happened, this is one of the sharpest fall in the shortest time that we have seen, which has resulted in this panic creation as such. And from that perspective, you know, the broader aspect is more in terms of the valuations which are there available. But again, valuations, when you are getting into valuations, it is important to understand the expected earnings, because, you know, valuations are earnings, are slaves of the earnings. And if earnings are not going to come through, then the question is in terms of, are the even the current valuation good enough? So we believe that, you know, overall, while there is a sharp correction in the prices and therefore the valuations, probably, you know, we could see some more pain come through, you know, as and when the results, quarterly results of the companies are declared, not for March end, but for June end. So, you know, we believe that the disruption in manufacturing, disruption in services, so, you know, almost about 70% of the economy is non-functional. And that will have a big effect because we are already into, you know, into close to about 1 month of a kind of national lockdown. And depending on how things move forward and how the lockdowns are eased, you know, the earnings definitely will take a while to kind of revert back. So this markets definitely provide an opportunity to get in at this point of time. But is this the bottom? That is a question which will also depend in terms of how, you know, the economy moves and what is the government action and comfort towards handling the COVID-19 situation. And therefore, when the industry can start, when, you know, the services will normalize. And even if they normalize, you know, there are certain industries which will have a much longer term impact. For example, aviation, tourism, you know, multiplexes, restaurants, you know, construction. So these are the industries which will probably take much longer than other industries to kind of revive. So it's going to be a wait and watch as of now. And so we are not, optimistic at this point of time on equity, but we are surely kind of cautiously optimistic in terms of buying where we feel that, valuations are justifying the possible earnings with the next 1 year or so.
Okay. So you have a wait and watch policy right now. And I think that makes a lot of sense given that the lockdown itself is not over, and at least as of now. And it's going to end on 3rd May, but obviously we don't know whether it'll be extended after that or how there will be, you could call it a lift off, or you could call it whatever you want, or how the economy gets back into action. So, Nimesh, talk to us about debt. What exactly happened out there? Because we saw something that we don't see very often. You know, you had a few liquid funds, you had a few, ultra short funds, which were supposed, which in concept and in theory are supposed to ensure that at least your capital is safe. Returns might fluctuate, which is fine. But on a couple of days in the end of March, I think some, a couple of unusual events happened. Just walk us through what exactly has happened in the debt market and how this will pan out in the future.
So debt market, as everyone knows, is also kind of, the returns are inversely correlated to the movement in the interest rates. So, as and when the interest rates rise in the economy, the returns will kind of go down, or, can also be negative, as what we have seen. And when the interest rates go down from the current levels, then you will see capital appreciation coming into your debt funds. Now, having said that, March is typically a month, even otherwise, where there is a lot of liquidity squeeze from the point of view of the tax payments, and also from the point of view of the overall settlement of accounts which the corporates get into. So, from that perspective, we have always seen spikes in the interest rates towards second half of March, and that typically also what would have happened. But to add to that, we also had this effect of fear, which was there, and therefore we saw a lot of withdrawals also happening, from liquid funds. And from that perspective, it kind of spooked the markets, where liquidity was squeezed, and therefore the interest rates went up, giving kind of negative returns for some period of time. But that was a one-off, and that is not something which will affect, because typically liquid funds and money market funds, where most of the corporate liquidity lies, are quite efficient to bounce back as and when the interest rates stabilize, which happened in a couple of days post this event happening. So that's where the debt side on the liquidity is concerned. But also worrying is in terms of the credit aspect of fixed income investments, which is there.
Got it. Folks, we're going to take a small break out here. On the other side of this break, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about specifics, how to approach the equity markets and how to approach the debt markets in terms of what to do. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. My guest, Nimesh Shah, Head of Investments at BNP Paribas Wealth Management. We'll be right back. Folks, welcome back to this episode of Paisa Vaisa. We're talking about asset allocation during this crisis. So my guest, Nimesh Shah, Head of Investments at BNP Paribas Wealth Management. In the first half, we spoke about his general take on what's happened so far on equity markets and in the debt markets, and as well as the concept of asset allocation and tactical strategy. Nimesh, welcome back. Let's get into specifics now. So within equity markets, we know that it's a huge space. You could look at it in any which way you want. You could look at it in terms of large cap, mid cap, small cap, or for a lot of us now, since we are also investing in mutual funds, you could look at it as active investment and passive investment. So depending on the products that our listeners choose, let's talk about what are your views on the equity side of asset allocation.
Sure. See, when we talk of asset allocation, like what you've discussed earlier, broadly, it has asset allocation has two sides. And I will come to why each side is important. One side of asset allocation is in terms of the investor side, where you understand the risk of the investor, and not only his risk profiling, but also in terms of risk aptitude or the attitude towards risk, which is quite different from generally saying that, you know, I am a moderate investor versus saying that, you know, I can kind of be okay with, you know, X amount of loss on my portfolio on a single given day. So understanding that risk aspect is one side of the asset allocation coin. And the other side is in terms of the market risk. So the market in terms of risk and the valuations which are available is the second side of the asset allocation coin. And that's where combining both is where, you know, there is an advantage as far as asset allocation is concerned. Because asset allocation, especially when you introduce a concept like tactical or opportunistic asset allocation, it will actually help reduce the risk rather than increase the risk. Because sometimes what happens is that if you don't reallocate, then you are running a higher risk than allocating and moving out to different asset class or different sub asset class at a given point of time because of the underlying market volatility or the underlying valuations which become either attractive or unattractive. So okay. With that background,
I just wanted to just ask you a couple of questions more on that background, because I found what you said really interesting. You spoke to us about the asset side. Could you just help our listeners with something on the investor side? In your experience, you know, what are the different kinds of investor risks that you've seen? Because this is something that happens once in a decade, or I don't know, actually. The people that you talk to, your clients or all that, what's been their view or how have you seen investor risks so far? I'm asking this question to you because, you know, we started this show in 2017, and I'm sure that you've also been seeing that the monthly SIP flows into the market since then, or at least in the last 2-3 years, has only increased. So could you just explain this investor risk concept a little bit more to our listeners?
Sure. So, broad concept, investor risk can be categorized into, you know, very conservative, moderate, aggressive, and very aggressive. Now, depending on the risk taking capability in terms of, how much loss of return or loss of capital can an investor bear is something which will define in terms of how much risk an investor should take on his portfolio. So typically you find, saying that, your asset allocation into equity should be probably, 100 minus your age. Well, that's a rule of thumb. But, the asset allocation should be based on your risk-taking capability. And here, what we have found is that, with a longer-term perspective, clients are quite comfortable, sticking to their particular risk category. Say, for example, I have, said that I am an aggressive investor or a moderate investor about, 1 year back or even 6 months back. But now, if you ask me again, having seen this volatility, the investor psychology comes into play and I tend to be more risk-averse than what I was 6 months back. And that is what is actually hurts asset allocation, where instead of taking advantage of the current situation, you actually kind of, withdraw and go more safe rather than kind of taking advantage of the opportunity which is available as far as your valuations are concerned. So seeing a mark-to-market loss on a portfolio, so on day one or, when the circuit set, we would have seen after that 30%, 40% drop in portfolio value. But the bounce back has been equally sharp. We are seeing a 20% up. I am not suggesting that the markets, we'll have a V-shaped recovery or a U-shaped recovery. But the idea is that, the risk profile should not change with the volatility in market. The risk profile should change only if there is a situational change at your end. So, for example, if you've got an inheritance and suddenly your risk profile may increase, or if you have a liability which has come on and your risk profile may decrease. So that would be the reasons why you should change your risk profile and not because of what the market condition is.
Great. Now let's get into the specifics on the equity side.
Sure. So, when we're talking about equity, if you look at the overall, broad markets, which we have discussed earlier, we are definitely seeing a lot of, volatility, which is increased. And we have seen the VIX, that is volatility index, also kind of jump up considerably in the past 1 month. So, on equity side, like if we break down, into three major, kinds of, equity investments possible, which is in terms of large cap stocks, mid cap stocks, and small cap stocks. So, as we have discussed on the risk side of it, surely small cap stocks will carry higher risk than what the large cap stocks will carry. So what we have seen right now is that the large cap, mid cap, and small cap all have seen a massive fall. And if you look at data as of a few days back, then on an average, all the three indices have fallen about 20 to 25% from the peak, which was there in January or mid of January. As such. So that from that perspective, all of them have become attractive. But importantly, what is to note is that the whenever there is a situation where we have seen a sudden downturn or sudden stop in the economy, it is generally the large caps which revive faster. And that's where they have the capability also to kind of meet the challenges which the economy is posing, and therefore their capability to bounce back in terms of business and therefore earnings is much better than compared to the small cap and mid cap. So if one is looking at allocation right now, definitely we would say that tactically one should allocate larger amount to large cap. But one should also understand that it should not be a zero allocation to small cap and mid cap, because historically, small cap and mid cap have always outperformed the large cap by almost about 200 to 500 basis points or 2 to 5%. So, your allocation should be across these sub asset classes, with large allocation probably more than 50-60% or close to 70% to large caps at this point of time. And then look at small cap and mid cap also as far as valuations are concerned. So to give you a perspective, if I look at last 8 years, including 2020 up till say 15th of March, then the mid cap index would have given a return which is about 14.5, while the large cap has given about 9.5 or 9.8.
Okay.
So definitely there is this variation in return which is there, and that's where understanding your risk and not making the mistake of not investing into mid cap and small cap also is very important at this point of time. One should not be fearful and stay away from that.
Sure, and that of course will depend on your investor risk profile. Also, what Nimesh had spoken at the start of the second half of our recording today. Great, Nimesh. So you have spoken to us about large cap, mid cap, small cap. I think that's very useful for us. Let's talk about this from an active versus passive strategy. Okay, because I think last 3-4 years, the awareness of passive products has increased. A lot of people are now interested in probably looking at something that's simple, easy to understand, and low cost. So just tell us your views on active versus passive in the equity space.
Sure. So in fact, active versus passive can be best understood on the equity space purely from the point of view that, the results can be kind of quite different. The point is very important to understand that, active management in developing economies or active management in markets which are not as efficient compared to developed economies or efficient markets. So that's where the difference lies. So inefficiency in the market being relatively larger in India compared to other developed markets is where active investments may still hold good for some years to come. Inefficiency, I would mean in terms of the depth of the market. So if you look at it, even amongst the index stocks, we have seen that the run up to 41,000 of index on the Sensex was largely led by about 10 to 15 stocks. So beyond that, even on the index, the liquidity is different. Similarly, if you come down to mid cap and small caps, then the liquidity is quite low compared to what is there available in the in the developed markets. So the point which I'm trying to make here is that there is inefficiency in terms of price, not so much in terms of information, but this price inefficiency definitely helps active fund managers to exploit these kind of opportunities which are available, and therefore give a longer term better return compared to passive management. To give you a perspective, you know, if you look at last eight and a half years of return on a say a large cap fund versus a say Nifty 100, right? Mm-hmm. The difference is about 1% per annum.
Wow!
So it's a big difference. If you look at mid cap funds, right, the difference is almost close to about 1.9%. And if you look at small cap funds, I'm talking about a universe of anywhere between 25 to 30 funds in each of these categories, then the difference comes to you know, very much of almost about 6%.
Okay.
So that is the reason you know, why we are kind of recommending that you know, one should look at you know, active investments to a large extent in India, because that's where the alpha will be created compared to a passive investment. Passive investments are good, like what you mentioned, they are more cost effective, but definitely you know, passive investments will kind of have their own issues regarding you know, following an index and not having that much opportunity. So you may have only four or five indices available, while active fund manager can go across the you know, asset class spectrum or market cap spectrum and invest accordingly. So according to me, given the current situation in India and the state at which India is as far as the efficiency in the market and the ability of you know, of the fund managers, we could definitely look at you know, active investments more than passive investments. Passive investments can be part of a strategy, but definitely you know, they will tend to mute your returns with a longer term perspective.
Okay, great. Last question for the show also. What would be the specific strategy on the debt side? We spoke about equity. Let's just wind up this recording with the debt side of our investments.
Sure. Debt is, I think, more kind of difficult to understand purely from the point of view of, you know, the information availability and the correction which has happened. So if you look at the correction in the equity market, like what you have talked, is very apparent for everyone to see, and it's all over. But fixed income market generally kind of, you know, especially because given the, you know, the current economic situation, not only in India, but globally, we are expecting that, you know, the effects of that will probably be seen in the medium term. In the medium term, I would mean in the next three to six months, rather than, you know, kind of what is apparently kind of visible right now. Purely from the point of view, the effect of you know, not being into manufacturing or not being into service for more than a month will surely have impact on the corporate bottom lines and top lines both. And to that effect, it will definitely lead to you know, kind of credit rating agencies reviewing the rating of these companies, and therefore impacting the quality of portfolio or impacting the returns on the portfolio. So it is a possibility that we will see in the next 3 to 6 months more downgrades than upgrades happening in the economy. And from that perspective, it is we are kind of cautiously pessimistic on debt side, where we would urge investors to make sure that you know, the credit risk which they have invested in is very well understood, and it is within the risk which that they can take. And risk can come across, you know, the sectors, because this you know, pandemic has not spared any sector. And like the sectors I mentioned earlier, definitely they will see higher risk compared to other sectors.
Okay, Himesh, on the debt side now, I just have this one question, because our listener base is really so diverse and varied. Some of us might have a job. Some of us, God forbid, might not have a job. Some of us might be just looking out for work. So our liquidity needs can be a little bit different, especially in these very uncertain times over the next, I don't know, maybe 6 to 12 months. So do you think it makes sense for us to just have, I don't know, maybe set aside some money in some kind of emergency fund? Or what would be your views on that? And what would be a good place to keep that money?
So yes, in terms of because of the uncertainty, you know, definitely it makes sense even otherwise in normal times to keep aside, you know, a few months of income aside as you know, as emergency or rain check money, and that is something which can be kept either in money market funds or liquid funds, and you know, which can be kind of accessed without any penalty, you know, at a day's notice. and that will definitely help investors kind of to feel the comfort, and therefore having set aside that money, the rest of the money can be looked at a different perspective. Otherwise, generally what happens, because of fear, if you don't have that money set aside, you will look at the entire portfolio in a similar manner with a similar risk. And therefore, to the suggestion that you have made, yes, X percentage of your portfolio can be into liquid and money market, especially for the next 3 to 6 months, till the time there is more clarity on how the economy and the global cues pan out.
Great. And that is exactly what we are all waiting for, more clarity on how the economy and therefore our lives will pan out over the next 6-12 months. I have no idea how long this is going to last. It's not good for anybody, whether you're in India or whether you are in the US or anywhere in the world for that matter. That's why I hope that all our listeners are staying safe, staying at home and taking a lot of care of themselves and their loved ones. That is a wrap on this show, The Asset Allocation During This Crisis Special. My guest, Nimesh Shah, Head of Investments, BNP Paribas Wealth Management. Nimesh, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on this show.
Thank you, Anupam.
No material on the show should be considered as financial advice. The material on the show is for informational purposes only. Please consult a financial advisor before taking any investment decision.